This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East River 9. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees live at the River House at East River 9, the new par 3 course in Houston over on the east side of town, eastriver9.com. A great spot. If you're a golf fan. It's a great spot if you're just looking for something to do. It's a great spot to have lunch, dinner inside the River House, drink and food specials during the East River 9 Masters weekend, a hole-in-one challenge all weekend long as well. If you make a hole-in-one, you receive a Sunday golf bag, 30-day membership if you hit that hole-in-one. A fantastic spot. Nine-hole par 3 golf course. You can get in, play fast, challenge yourself a little bit with your short game. They have the driving range that Blankers was talking about. So a spot that you're looking for to get some practice in, well, it's right there in the Houston area. The skyline and the backdrop, pickleball facility as well. And they also have the LED lights for evening play too. So if you can't make it out, you have to work, obviously. They have the LED lights for evening play. Great place to work on your game. Great place to hang out and a fun place to be as well. Asking you the question, Tiger Woods at this stage of his career is, quite frankly, average might be nice. Like, he's played in three tournaments since last year's Masters, hasn't done anything of any sort of, like, relevance, and I understand why. Like, I'm not knocking Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, potentially the greatest golfer of all time. Many people would consider him the greatest. Has had the terrible accident where he nearly lost his life and nearly lost his leg. So I understand the reason that Tiger Woods is currently where he's at relative to the rest of the golfers that are playing in the Masters, that will be playing in the majors. So it's not a knock on Tiger. It's more of a question of, this is a dude that is like such a polarizing athlete because of his history. We can't take our eyes off of him, even though he's probably going to miss the cut at Augusta. What other athletes were like that? Kobe Bryant, Derek Jeter, Cal Ripken, someone just texting in, Pete Rose, whenever he had the 44-game hitting streak when he was 37 years old. Rose is tricky because Rose was able to sustain like a level of high production that was like unbelievable for a dude at his age.
Yep. Yeah, that was from Todd the Pro, not Todd the Show. And Todd's a baseball aficionado. It was also at a time when we didn't have social media, when we didn't have 24-second news cycles instead of 24-hour.
Interesting.
So it was a different level in terms of how many people could pay attention if they wanted to, because you couldn't just find any radio broadcast you wanted or find a way to watch it. You were hoping it was the game of the week. So you had to really rely on like newspapers and things like that, which made it different. But I think in today's day and age, if he was chasing the same record, you would see break-in coverage. You would see a lot of people paying a lot more attention because they'd have access to it that they didn't have necessarily back then.
Here are a few that I thought of, because I think it's hard to use the team comparison. There are a few, and I think the ones that you mentioned, Ripken, Jeter, they're certainly on that list. Kobe, definitely. Pete Rose, I think, would qualify.
By the way, you were right. It was against the Jazz.
Was it against the Jazz?
Oh, here we go. See, this is the difference between the two of us. I'm always willing to give you the props and the flowers. You nailed it. It was against the Jazz, and it was a 60-piece.
I remembered it was 60. I wasn't sure the opponent. Like, I wasn't very confident in the Jazz. I wouldn't have put money on
it. I remember watching it in just total amazement going, I don't care how many shots he takes. Like, the fact that he's able to be that of just, but the fact that he was still able to get buckets,
right.
I'm going, it's crazy.
I watched that game live. I definitely did. I remember watching the game. That's probably why I remember it was the Jazz, just some weird memory that the Jazz were the opponent. I don't think they were playing tons of defense in that game, but nonetheless, he scored 60 in his final game. So I think Kobe would qualify for that, no doubt about it. Jordan with the Wizards, I think, is borderline. Like, I don't know if many people, when Jordan was the Wizards, were tuning in every single night. I really don't think that they did.
No, I don't think so. I think that, because there wasn't really anything at stake. It was just the fact that he was hanging on. It's kind of like, you know, going to a concert that you want to see before they don't tour anymore. you're going to see them, but you're going with the expectations. You're going to see a different version of them where they're not the same player they once were.
Here are some of the individual ones I have, because I think it's easier to draw a comparison with individual athletes as opposed to athletes that played on team sports. I think Serena Williams was one of them, right? Like Serena Williams. Now, the problem with Serena, not a problem, was that there was never a huge drop-off in her game for a long period of time. But the last year or two of Serena, when she was getting ousted, like in the first few rounds, people that liked to watch women's tennis were watching women's tennis only for Serena Williams. And then when she would lose, they would tune out. I think Serena Williams belongs in this conversation.
She had a couple. But the thing was, she was still in the top 10 in her sport. It was just when she played someone in the top 10. Like, she would get to the semis every time, and now people are paying attention because she's got a chance to break a record like we were talking about, and then she would just get her doors blown off because she wasn't the same player. So from that regard, it's like you're still at a good level, like a close to elite level. You're just not in that top tier, and that's what disappointed people and turned people off. They were like, well, she's good enough to get there. I don't know that she's good enough to win another one, and then click, they go to something else.
2982, Jordan played double A, not triple A. My bad. My cousin was on his Birmingham Barons team. That's pretty cool. Terry Francona was the manager of that team. Terry Francona
right.
will tell
yes,
you
was.
That Michael Jordan, if he stayed in baseball, would have made the major leagues. He said he was starting to figure it out, or starting to click. He like crushed it in the fall league. He said that if he stayed in baseball, he would have been a big leaguer.
Didn't the White Sox call him up? Wasn't there a September call up?
No,
I thought I thought he got a really brief like September call up with the White Sox.
He never appeared in a major league game.
He didn't. Okay, maybe it was like a spring training game or they did something.
He definitely did in the spring training. I remember watching minor league games where he was playing with the big league team. It was probably like the exhibition just before the start of the year.
I was going to say, it might have been
in
Wrigley.
Chicago. I think it was at Wrigley.
There you go. I was going to say, it was like in a major league park, and I want to say maybe it was one of those where, you know, you play with the Mets play the Yankees, or in this case, the White Sox play the Cubs.
It was the exhibition right before the start of the season, because there was still some debate whether or not he was going to make the big league roster. So
yeah,
he
I
was
want to
with
say he had
the
like
team
a double
in
down
the
line
games.
Or something.
Yeah, I think he did. I think they played like a one at Comiskey, one at Wrigley, and Jordan appeared in those games. Yeah, a couple of the individual players that I have on here. So I mentioned Serena. How about Muhammad Ali? Like, how many times did people that were so bought in on Muhammad Ali, they loved the popularity of Muhammad Ali, that they would go watch Muhammad Ali when he was 40 years old and getting his brain fried? Like, so many people were in on Muhammad Ali that they would watch him no matter what.
It's a good one. Boxing's got several. When you think about it, Ali, Tyson passed his prime.
Tyson was the next guy on my list because everybody wanted to watch Tyson.
Must see TV, and everybody just assumed it was the Mike Tyson of old, and then the devastation when he would get his doors blown off. But Manny Pacquiao, and even to some degree,
I don't know if I can go Manny. I don't know if I can go Manny. If you're going like Ali, you're talking Tyson. Like Manny was there, like a great boxer, but Manny was nowhere near the popularity of those two.
He had a lot of popularity, but it was also where I was going was because by the time we finally got Mayweather Pacquiao, it was at a point where he was so far past his prime, both guys actually were, that it was like a disappointment. But until you got there, people, you know, because they had that in the back of their mind and they kept watching him, that I feel like they felt like they were hanging on to a guy that was past his prime because they were hopeful just of the fight. Even though when they got the fight, they were like, yeah, but they're both so far past where they should be.
Right. Like, you honestly, you see this a lot with wrestlers, to be quite honest with you. Like, how many people go watch Ric Flair, like, whenever he was 70 years old in a wrestling ring? Like, a lot. Like, it's weird that you do, but a lot of people did that. Or, like, The Undertaker. Like, people love to go see those dudes, even though they're obviously way past their prime and can't really move very well anymore. Tyson was one that I had, certainly. People were texting in George Foreman. Like, people going to watch George Foreman late
that.
In his career.
Yeah.
Now, like, how many fights did George Foreman have late in his career, though, that wasn't a heavyweight title fight? Like, because remember, he won it late in his career, then he lost it, I believe, to Michael Moore. And did he? How many fights did he have after Moore?
Yeah, and what were they must-see TV, right? Again, we're talking about a different era with access being a little different. But I don't.
Oh, he did hang on. He
had
four more fights after Moore.
I don't remember
that.
It was almost watching Butterbean again, where you're hoping he has the ability with one punch to knock anybody out. You just didn't know how long he could last to see if he could get that one punch in. But I don't think it had the same kind of eyeball effect where everybody must-see TV had to see it.
A couple people are texting in Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps winning again in 2016 Olympics. Here's the thing, though. Like, again, we're talking about a player who is now average in their career. Tiger Woods currently right now at the 2023 Masters is average to below average. Like, that's just where he is as in his career as a golfer. Yes, because of all the stuff that's happened over the course of his career. Most recently, the car wreck that nearly, you know, cost him to lose his leg. He's an older golfer now as well. I understand that Tiger's one of the greatest golfers of all time, but right now, compared to the rest of the sport, he's average to below average. So which average athlete, it could be because they're in the twilight of their career, it could be because they're old, were athletes that you could not take your eyes off of. They're so polarizing that you watch them even be average. You watch them shoot, you know, a 76 on day one of the Masters. You watch them miss the cut on Thursday, Friday, the Masters. Michael Phelps won the gold. Like, Michael Phelps was not average relative to his sport.
You have to be one of the best you're the best in your country, one of the best in your country, but definitely still one of the best in the world if you qualified for the Olympics.
See, Jason in Clear Lake says the Maguire-Sosa home run chase. That's a different conversation.
They
like,
weren't.
Yes, that was polarizing. Yes, that was captivating. But those dudes were at the pinnacle of their career. They were in their prime. Which athletes would you continue to watch? You couldn't take your eyes off of them, even when they were mediocre, even when they were bad. You just had to watch them because of what they did in the past. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them forever because they get results, because they're great people doing great things on a daily basis. I love Dr. O and his staff because they care about their patients, and I see it all the time when I'm in the clinic. They basically want to know where you are lacking, where you are not capable of doing what you used to do. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, everybody gets to those problem areas when they start getting older. Maybe they don't have enough energy to get through the day. Maybe they can't get started on a workout program. Maybe they don't feel like they're getting the results they once did. It's all manageable and all taken care of, all at Apollo Men's Health. Two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. You can check in with either one of them, and you can check their website at apollomh.com, because when you go there, you'll see all the services they offer. And lo and behold, there's probably going to be a couple that are really interesting because you know that they could help you. Well, make your first appointment right there online. When you do, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted and there's discounts for military personnel and first responders. Then go in with an open mind. Tell them exactly what's bothering you, where you've been lacking, and they'll put you on a program that works. They'll get you the results you need. It starts with energy, and you can do everything from a B12 shot to all the different ways for men and women. They have hormone therapy. And then from a workout perspective, you can do a full body composition analysis to see where you are when you start your journey. And then check those important numbers every month or so to see how your body fat has gone down, to see how your muscle mass has gone up, to see that you're moving in the right direction. And if you want to recover quicker, they have HGH peptide therapy and so much more. They're good people doing great things. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot or body comp on your first official visit. But check them out today. They'll make a difference in your life. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
Live from East River 9 for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
8804 says, I used to live down the street from George Foreman growing up, and he would always run by me and give me a high five when I was at the bus stop in the morning. I never knew who he was until my dad told me. I went to daycare, pre-K, with George Foreman's son. I think it was the third. I want to say it was the George Foreman the third at the Learning Tree in Humble, right next to the Bluebell Factory. He grew up right in the – I mean, Foreman lived in Humble forever. I think he lives in Huffman now, actually. I think he still lives in the area. George Foreman does.
George Jr. went to Rice.
Did he?
Yeah, and he was always around the Rice basketball team. Yeah,
he's got a bunch of kids. 5044, Arnold Palmer, I would have watched him hitting out of a wheelchair. That's what we're talking about. Which athletes would you just – you were polarized by, you were captivated with, you could not take your eyes off no matter how bad it got. Arnold Palmer hitting it out of a wheelchair. For me, it was like Mike Tyson was one for me. I was watching Mike Tyson lose to bums late in his career because I remembered how Mike Tyson was the baddest man on the planet, and I was hoping just for 1 second he could touch back into that. That's why we're watching Tiger Woods today in Augusta. We're wondering, can Tiger Woods one more time touch into that, you know, dominant golfer that has the second most majors of all time? Augusta's probably the only place that he can win a major again in his career. Yet he's an average golfer in 2023. He's not performing today. He's over par. He's going to have a very difficult time making the cut, which would mean he would fall one short of the all-time record for consecutive cuts made. Gary Player, Fred Couples, Go Cougs have done it 23 times in a row. They hold the record. Who is that player for you that you would watch them hitting a golf ball out of a wheelchair, that you would watch them lose to bums? Some people on the text line saying Conor McGregor, Anderson Silva. I like UFC. I'm not a diehard, hardcore UFC guy. I'll watch big fight. I'll be honest with you. I'm a casual UFC watcher. There you have it. I'll be completely honest. I'm a casual when it comes to UFC. I'll watch the big fights. I'll watch the huge pay-per-views. I'm not watching every single card. But the dudes that I love to watch the most, currently it's Jon Jones. But in the past, Conor McGregor is a dude that I'll always watch no matter what because it's must-see TV. I would do it with Ronda Rousey, to be quite honest with you, and she was getting destroyed in her last couple of fights. And then the other dude was Anderson Silva. Like, anytime now, I do draw a line. I have no interest to see Anderson Silva in a boxing ring, but Anderson Silva in an octagon, I'll watch him if he fights tomorrow.
Well, I'm thinking about individual sports, and I think that we're watching an event where I think, again, in a different era when we didn't have the 24-second news cycle, when Jack Nicklaus was 46 years old and winning a Masters, that was if you were anywhere near a TV. People were dialed in going, this dude is too old and not supposed to be doing what he's doing, and then he won the Masters at 46, and people were dialed in. It's the same way when Tiger won the Masters 4 years ago. People thought he could never do it again, and when he did, it was must-see TV, and everybody in the world was watching. And I think you go back to tennis, too, when guys like the 1 year in the U.S. Open, when I think Connors and McEnroe, each at a different time, made a run late in their career when it looked like they had nothing left to give the sport that they had given so much to. And everybody was like, oh, my God, could that one miracle week or moment happen? And they fell short, but I think it dialed in a lot of people to watch. But the whole era thing means something because I think if Nicklaus or someone like it, like if Tiger made a run this week, can you just imagine the TV ratings and the how many people on Twitter going play by play, shot by shot for everything he did?
Through the roof. I mean, you could have Tiger and the Seven Dwarves like as the best eight, like in the final like four pairings on Sunday, and those ratings would be through the roof. If you had Rory, Rahm, Scheffler, like let's just say the eight most popular golfers not named Tiger Woods and the Seven Dwarves would outrate the next eight most popular golfers.
I forget who it was, but Scott Van Pelt was spot on. He was on the driving range, and there was a player that was like working on something or something, and he didn't feel like it was, you know, his swing was where it needed to be. And Scott Van Pelt said, "Don't worry about it. You're a couple groups behind Tiger. You could play naked, and no one would notice."
Yeah,
because
how captivating he is, even though he's mediocre.
I can tell you, I was at the Masters in 08 when Trevor Immelman won. And all I wanted to see was Tiger in the – yeah, exactly. It was that was one of the bummers. But even then, like, you knew where Tiger was on the course at all times. You could hear the roar and the, oh, and no matter what he did, it was amplified across the entire venue to where, you know, oh, Tiger must be on 12. Oh, Tiger's – you know, you could tell by the size of the crowds and the sounds you were hearing exactly where he was.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of goes to this conversation, how captivating Tiger is. And it's still that way, even though Tiger is currently, in 2023, a very mediocre golfer. No knock to him because he's older in his career. He's been through some health scares, almost died in a car wreck not that long ago. B. Hannon says Vince Carter. You think Vince Carter was that guy? I'll be honest with you. I had no interest in watching Vince Carter whenever he was in Atlanta. Like, he hung on forever, but I wasn't glued to my TV to see what he was going to do.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's one. But I also say the caveat is it depends on where you grew up and who you were watching. Like, I remember, you know, growing up in Milwaukee, Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, those were the guys. And when Robin Yount was past his prime chasing 3,000 hits, you knew, you know, he was a shell of himself, but you couldn't stop watching and trying to find out if he was going to do it because of the fact that it meant so much to you because he was such a staple in, like, your own personal sports lore growing up. And I think that you have a lot of those, like you mentioned. I think that it wasn't national, but everybody locally was hanging on every swing of Craig Biggio chasing 3,000. And every market and every team and every fan base has a certain moment like that that's not necessarily the national equivalent, but it definitely hits home locally.
Yeah, that was a huge local one for sure. 7716 says Roger Federer. A lot of people hung on to watch Federer. A lot of, like, you had to be a tennis guy, but people loved Roger Federer. For me, I was more of a I watched tennis much more when I was younger, to be quite honest, and I loved Andre Agassi. Andre Agassi was my tennis equivalent to Mike Tyson. Like, I could watch Mike Tyson fight anybody. I could watch Mike Tyson fight tomorrow. I was the same thing with Agassi. Agassi, late in his career, no matter who he was playing, I would have watched an Andre Agassi match for
sure. I agree. I wasn't the biggest tennis guy when Mattress Mack used to have that clay court championship or whatever. When I heard you could go see Agassi in person, and again, with the Nike connection too, when he had he was the trendsetter with the shoes and the shirts and the just the overall imaging that they did for him, you wanted to see him. He had a likability factor that you were rooting for him. And so, like I said, I wasn't a big tennis guy, but I wanted to see him in person, and I wanted to support him because I was pulling for him. And you go sport by sport, and it's also not just like the market. We all have our favorite players. And so when they came to town, I remember guys coming to town where I was like, you know what? They're not a great team, or I'm not totally, jazzed about this, that, or the other thing. But if I get a chance to see a guy before he retires – that's what was really, really, really good. It's like I keep going back to, like, if there's a concert and you know that McCartney can't hit the high notes and you never saw the Beatles, but then this might be the last go-round for a McCartney or a Stevie Wonder, and you go, they're musical legends. I want to be able to say I saw them, but I think that's the same kind of equivalent when you talk about some of these sports memories.
9868 says Phil Hellmuth. I don't know if I'll go that far about wanting to watch
Series
Phil Hellmuth.
Poker?
Yeah, he actually won a big tournament the other day, the U.S. Open Poker Championship, I believe he won. He made a straight flush on the river, but he was dominating going in, all in preflop.
Those guys, the money they rolled in for a period of time was just ridiculous.
It was crazy.
It's still a lot.
Yeah, but like Chris Moneymaker, like that.
He's the one who.
Yeah, what's
the
guy
who
that looks like a little like Tiger?
You're thinking Phil Ivey.
Yeah.
See, Phil Ivey would be the one that I would want to watch.
So Phil Ivey was rolling in it so much that in Vegas at Shadow Creek, which is a hyper private, it was for a time they only let like 12 golfers a day play it kind of experience, and those guys would go, and we talked to one of the caddies there that said that when he caddied for him and Helm, all these guys that were taking up golf, it didn't matter if they sucked at the game of golf, they were betting like $100,000 a hole. And the caddy was like, they're asking me for advice, and when I'm right, they're giving me tips on spot. He goes, and I'm paying my mortgage and doing all these. He goes, it's just amazing to see the money that they had. Yeah. And then Ivy was rolling in it so much, he paid, not only his caddy, he paid another guy to walk with him that just teed up his ball. It was crazy. I'd watch it. I'm going, is this dude really having someone else tee up his tee shot? And
they're
lo and behold, on every hole, he had some dude doing it.
I remember they bet one poker player to like play four rounds in like a certain amount of time. Like he had four rounds, he had to walk the whole thing, and he had like 10 hours to play all four rounds. It didn't matter his score, he just had to finish four rounds in like 10 hours. And he was like running all over. I don't think he did it actually. I think he actually had to be hospitalized for dehydration and stuff.
I think that would be quite a challenge.
Some people were saying Ken Griffey. Like, I didn't really have any interest to see Ken Griffey Jr. as a White Sox. I'll be honest with you. I didn't need to see Ken Griffey Jr. when he was late in his career.
Kind of Bo Jackson after the injury, too, when he kept trying to hang on. Like, that was different because they weren't chasing any milestones, per se. And those are two of my favorite baseball – Griffey is my favorite baseball player of all time. But you go Griffey Jr. and you go Bo, two of my favorites of all time as athletes. But I didn't have any kind of special need to see them because they weren't doing the milestone chasing, or they weren't doing things to where you wanted to pay special attention. And quite honestly, you didn't want to watch them and remember them as the last time you saw them in that mode, as opposed to remembering them when they were at the top of their sport doing things that you thought you'd never see again.
Yeah, there are players that are like that, though. We went through a few. Aggie Mack, Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't know enough about international soccer to know like how many people still come to games and watch games because Ronaldo. I imagine it's high. I know how popular Ronaldo is. Yeah,
he wouldn't
I would
be making that money
high.
Like Messi, too. They wouldn't be making that money if they didn't still have a draw factor. But, like, you know, to the Michael factor, I wanted to remember Michael as a Bull. I know that if you were lucky enough to catch him on a night where he caught fire, it was something that would be meaningful. But I didn't want to remember him as kind of a washed-up wizard where he was a shell of himself. I wanted to remember this guy that was the most dominant player basketball may have ever seen.
Ocho said Tim Tebow. I agree with football Tim Tebow. Football Tim Tebow I would watch no matter what and always root for Tim Tebow. I didn't care about baseball Tim Tebow, though. I had no desire about baseball Tim Tebow.
Yeah, see, in the pros, I didn't want to watch him because I didn't think he was that good. And it wasn't that he was diminished skills. It's just it was at a different level.
713-780-ESPN. More and more people are starting to talk about this trend. Peter King started it early in the week. Lance Erline is kicking around the idea as well. Lance usually is in a little bit of the know for the Texans as well. I've seen more and more mocks that have the Houston Texans going defense at number two as well. What's the play at number two if Bryce Young goes number one to the Carolina Panthers? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees live from the River House, East River 9 in Edo on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, we know the Masters is on, and that means that it's the first major of the year, and we're watching it. We're talking about it. We're at East River 9 telling you this is where you should be watching it. But there's nothing like cheering on your favorite golfers during a major tournament with a little extra incentive, like putting some money down at mybookie.ag. You can put a little wager on Scotty or Jordan or Rory or John Rahm, or whoever you want, and enjoy golf more than ever before. All you got to do is go to mybookie.ag. If you're making your first deposit, use the promo code BET975 and claim an exclusive deposit bonus up to $1,000. It's basically 50% of what you put down. Put 100 in, you get 50 extra bucks. Put 500 in, get 250, and so on and so forth. More money in your account means more chances to win with more games, golfers, and plays to bank, and a chance to actually make a profit watching sports. It's absolutely phenomenal, and they have all the sports, too. If you're not into golf, you may be like Major League Baseball, NBA basketball, NHL hockey, soccer, UFC, XFL, and a whole lot more. They even have live casino betting with real dealers. If anyone wants to play blackjack, this is the place to go. Be the master of your destiny this week and the master of sports every week by going to the only place I tell you to do. It's going to mybookie.ag. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag and the promo code BET975.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East River 9. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Somebody DM'd me and said, Secretariat. As an athlete, we just can't take our eyes off that are in the twilight of their career. Did Secretariat turn into glue? Was that something that happened to Secretariat? What? That's a fair question.
I would think studying before you go to glue.
He probably had the pedigree to go out to studying. You're probably right.
Yeah,
I would think so.
Yeah.
You're not making glue out of Secretariat. That's all the other horses that aren't good at running and going fast that you turn into glue. Right?
Right.
That's what happens. That's the science behind it.
Maybe.
If you're fast, you can stud. If you're slow, you're glue.
No, if you get results and you show that you're dominant, they're very interested in you being a stud.
We said the same thing.
In a different way.
Sure. 3993 said Hulk Hogan. A lot of people are weird with their wrestlers, man. Like, they'll go watch these dudes that are 75 years old wrestle inside of bingo halls if they liked them when they were kids.
Oh, you're right.
Like that Ric Flair last match, like, the dude's, like, probably going to die, like, soon. Almost died in the ring, apparently. And he's selling out, like, little arenas because they want to watch Ric Flair, the final match. Weird.
Yeah, it's weird but true. The passion that goes with wrestling fans, and we've seen it. We've got, you know, guys that work at the station and guys that used to work at the station and around the station and listeners to the show that are just massive WWE fans and massive wrestling fans. Look, Adrian Chavarria, who's the voice of the Rockets in Spanish, is the biggest wrestling fan I've ever seen in my life. He collects every card, every figurine, all these other things. And, like, on every flight that we ever went on for road trips, while everybody else is watching movies and all these other things and doing all these other things, he watched one-on-one old-school interviews with wrestlers. Like everything from the Jim Brunzel and the High Flyers and the Crusher and Baron Von Roschke to the current wrestlers. I'm going, this is what you watch on a three-hour flight. Oh, wouldn't miss it. Got to watch every bit of it. I'm like, how many times have you seen it before? He carried a library of these interviews. I'm like, the devotion some people have for wrestling is crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's just it's up there. A lot of people are starting to figure that the Texans might go defense at number two. Peter King talked about this early in the week. We saw the Lance Zierlein mock draft where the Panthers selected Bryce Young. Houston Texans went defense, Tyree Wilson. And Lance is starting to say that if Carolina takes Bryce Young, don't be surprised if the Texans go defense. And look, Lance last year got the Stingley pick right. He linked the Houston Texans to Kenyon Green. Whenever Lance says something, I give it a possibility. Like, I'm not going to say it's gospel. I'm not going to say it's guaranteed to happen. But if Lance is saying that Bryce Young's going number one to Carolina and Lance is telling you the Texans could go defense in that scenario, who am I to say that the Texans might not go defense in that scenario? I think it's 50-50.
Look, Lance hit both first-round picks last year. Lance knows people, and he does his job at a very, very high level. And so when we brought this Lance's draft up the other day and started talking about it and they made a video of it and they put it out there, you got people say clickbait. Is it really clickbait when there's actually a lot of science behind it and the fact that the guy hit it right last year? Maybe it's the fact that you call it clickbait because you don't want to face the reality that they might not do what everybody says and wants them to do and say that, you know, at number two, that's the way you're going to get a quarterback. But at the same time, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. And if they do have their heart set on one of those guys, and I keep harping on, they gotta have their gut feeling on one guy. Focus in on that guy and go get that guy. If it's Bryce Young and he's not available, then you got to figure out, like you call it, BPA. But they got to get the best player available to make this team better. And if it's not a quarterback at that point, then okay. Then it's going to be a tough pill for a lot of people to digest. But I definitely think it's a possibility.
Here was Chris Mortensen, long time, as you can tell, long time ESPN reporter that thinks Carolina will be selecting Bryce Young at the top of the draft on April 27th.
Phil, what I'm hearing is that both Mel and Todd are going to have to change their mock drafts.
Ooh.
And that Bryce Young is the pick. And yes, Frank Wright, connecting Frank Wright to C.J. Stroud in terms of the prototype of guy that he's worked with in the past, but they all love Bryce Young. I think I'll quote Adam Schefter.
Chris doesn't sound great. But he says Carolina's going to go number one, Bryce Young.
He's been through a lot of medicals, but I mean, when we were talking about guys we've watched past their prime, but we're still – Mort's a legend.
Yeah, somebody tweeted us and said the Killer Bees on that one too. By the way,
that's nice.
I don't think we're but he said he couldn't take his eyes off, so that's good. That part's good. Vegas is starting to catch up with this though, Blankers, because ever since Carolina traded to number one, C.J. Stroud has been the heavy favorite, and I like to look at Vegas trends. I like to look at market trends. I think a lot of times that tells us the real information way before reporters figure it out. To be quite honest with you, FanDuel now has Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud as co-favorites to be the number one pick. I believe that Stroud was all the way up to, and Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that Stroud was all the way up to like minus 300 to be the number one pick after Carolina traded for number one. If it wasn't that high, it was somewhere in that wheelhouse, 3-7.
Yeah, I saw like 250. I feel like it's where it was.
So minus 250. But the considerable favorite to be the number one pick, like the substantial favorite to be the number one pick after Carolina made that trade, all of a sudden Bryce Young has caught up. Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, according to FanDuel, are now minus 110 favorites to be the number one pick. The trend, the market trends, the Vegas trends are telling you that Bryce Young's going to be the number one pick for the Carolina Panthers, which all of a sudden, like for some people, that's doomsday. For other people, it's not doomsday. I, for one, am not a huge fan of C.J. Stroud, so I will be a little disappointed if the Houston Texans on the clock at number two select C.J. Stroud. I'd rather them go defense at that route. But I'm curious, what's the play at number two if Carolina does indeed do what Chris Mortensen says, what Vegas is starting to tell you, and they select Bryce Young at number one?
To me personally, and I think that Joe and I were in a similar situation with this. I still take C.J. Stroud. And I understand that from a draft perspective, Will Anderson's probably the better overall prospect, the higher-rated prospect. But I think that because both quarterbacks are believed to be at a certain tier and level above everybody else, if you have the chance to get either guy, I think you go get him. And I think when you factor in Caserio kind of inching closer to a really red-hot seat in terms of his job, don't fool yourself and think that general managers aren't considering that a little bit, too, with the pick that they make. But what if he doesn't like him?
But what if he doesn't like him? Like, if his seat is hot,
that goes back to my
Stroud,
other theory.
You've got to
trust who you want. But you also have to realize, I mean, then you just have the confidence of saying, look, I got a 6-year deal. I'm going to get paid no matter what. I don't know if this is going to get me another job somewhere down the line or not, but I know that this is the guy that I feel like is the better player. And you still have a chance to get quarterback. But, I mean, I just think that a lot of people, I think it's going to factor in because you know that everybody knows and hears and thinks that these two quarterbacks are on the same level and they're both above everybody else in the quarterback discussions for this draft. If you have a chance to get either one of them, then I think that a lot of people will back off of you and hold off. If you have a chance at getting one of them and you pass on them when you need a quarterback, then I think the clock starts ticking. Then I think all eyes and scopes are on you.
Until when, though?
And you are in the crosshairs.
Like, until when, though? Like, what if who you, like, pass up on, in this case Stroud, doesn't look good in four games?
Yeah, I mean, if you pass up on him and you take Anderson and Anderson gets off to an Aiden Hutchinson-like start, then I think that, yeah, then I think then people will start to walk it back a little bit. But I think
the pressure is the pressure. I don't think the pressure really changes. I think the pressure is the pressure. The hot seat is the hot seat. If you pick it right, everybody's going to be happy. If you pick it wrong, everybody's going to be unhappy. Like, it doesn't really matter who you pick.
In the scenario you painted for me, it can change. People can be pissed off beyond belief that you didn't take a quarterback at 2. And then 4 or 5 weeks into the season, if C.J. Stroud is pooping the bed and you take Will Anderson and he's got 4 or 5 sacks and he is looking like a dominant force in the NFL, people are going to walk it back. They're going to change their opinion and they're going to go, maybe I jumped too soon in terms of thinking that he screwed everything up.
But how about the other way? How about Nick Caserio makes the popular move, the popular pick, selects C.J. Stroud over Will Anderson. Will Anderson goes number 3, and then C.J. Stroud looks like a more athletic Jared Goff that looks like he's going to be mediocre over the course of his NFL career, and Will Anderson looks like he has the potential to be one of the best defensive ends in this draft or of, like, this 3 to 5 year period. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's going to jump on Caserio and be like, well, great. Yeah, it was the popular pick, but Nick Caserio got it wrong. So he's still going to be judged and still have his seat warm no matter who the draft pick is, even if it's popular versus not popular.
See, I hear you, but I don't think that he faces the scrutiny if he does what seemed to be
the right move. It happened last year on a lesser scale at corner. Stingley, and I know that you and I were on the sauce train. I understand that. But the city wasn't. The city wanted the kid from LSU, Derek Stingley. If you were going to go cornerback ahead of last year's NFL draft and you told the city, would you rather have Stingley? Would you rather have Sauce? Who would you take? The city would have told you Stingley. The city would have preferred Stingley over Sauce. You know how I know that? Because I was getting called an American Conference homer and liking Sauce Gardner because they played in the same league as the Houston Cougars and that Sauce wasn't the same tier as player as Derek Stingley. Yet we're critical now of Nick Caserio because he went Stingley over Sauce whenever that was actually the popular pick at the time.
But
corner,
Jeremy,
if you were looking specifically at corner.
But here's the thing. We're talking quarterback, not corner. So it's similar, but it's different because we're talking about the most important position in the game. We're talking about the one that's hyper-scrutinized and the one that everybody believes you have to have and have to have whenever it's available. And so it's at a higher level. You're totally accurate in what you're saying, but I think that it changes everybody's emotional feelings and the way that they react to it when you're talking about quarterbacks. Because you know that, you know, as much as there's a dime a dozen quarterbacks every single year, but you're looking for that one that takes you to where you want to go. And so when you think that you have the chance to get that guy, you go take that chance. And I don't think people are mad at you if you do, because you realize how important a position it is and the fact that it's an immediate necessity for this franchise, or at least a near immediate necessity. And that's why I don't think he would get beat up as much, because of the fact that he did what he had to do in this situation, and it was the most important position on the field.
713-780-3776. If the Vegas trends are right, if Mortensen is right, Carolina goes Bryce Young at number one. What is the play at two? Is it as easy as C.J. Stroud? 713-780-3776. We're also starting to see the Bijan Robinson conversations at number 12 start to kick back up again. Ugh. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, broadcasting live from the River House at East River 9.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from East River 9. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What do you do at number two? Bryce Young's off the board at number one. What is the play at two? 713-780-3776. Aggie Matt says, I think the Caserio seat being hot makes him go safe with the sure pick. Stroud isn't that. See, it's kind of the interesting thing about what is safe. Like, what is safe at two? One, I hope Caserio doesn't go safe.
It's a good question.
I hope Caserio goes with who he wants to go with at number two. But if you have questions of who Stroud's going to be, if you think that Stroud, like, he's been compared to Jared Goff. I think it's a bit unfair. But what if he's Jared Goff with athleticism and he's never a top 10 quarterback, but he's like always 12th? He's always the 12th best quarterback in the NFL. Is that what you want at number two? Would it be safer to go BPA and Will Anderson, who would be a, you know, potentially a top five, top 10 edge rusher? Now, I understand that's the scenario. We can't predict what's going to happen. But who's to say Stroud's the safe pick? I don't quite understand that as well.
I think Stroud is the safe pick from a perception and need perspective because it is the quarterback position. If this was a difference between a corner, a wide receiver, and a defensive lineman, I think we'd be having a different conversation. But because of the massive amount of attention the quarterback position has gotten with this franchise and the fact that there are, for all intents and purposes, for those people that you talk to, two guys in the top tier and you have a chance to take one of them, if you pass on them, that's why. That's why this is so magnified this year with this draft in this situation. And so that's why I firmly believe that it's going to be hyper-scrutinized and it's a bigger deal, and that's why I feel like Nick Caserio would get more, I don't want to say a full pass, but Nick Caserio wouldn't catch as much heat if he just does what everybody says is the natural right thing to do for this franchise and go quarterback if one of those two guys is there.
What do you personally do, Stroud? It sounds like you'd go Stroud.
I do.
Personally?
I do.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, for all the people, and Lance has said this, he goes, I believe that they have to, and this is before he did this last mock, but he basically said they're going to go quarterback. They need quarterback. They're going to draft a quarterback. Now, his scenario paints a picture where you could trade up and still get your favorite quarterback, and I'm not ruling that out, but if I am making that choice at two, if I'm in Nick Caserio's shoes, I am worried about the fact that from a possibility of losing my job. I love this job. I want to do this job for the rest of my life, whether I have 3 more years on my contract or not. I want to do this job, and I am paying attention to everything, and I know what the number one most glaring need on my football team is, regardless of how many holes I have to fill.
Stopping the
run.
And
if I think that there are two guys available in the top tier, I'm taking one of those guys.
But what if Will Anderson's a tier above them? Like, that's the thing is, like, if Nick Caserio's worried about his job, Nick Caserio, and he should be, is that Nick Caserio's going to take the football player that he thinks is the best. Like, and yes, position importance comes into play, but Nick Caserio worrying about his job doesn't mean he's going to draft a quarterback. Like, Nick Caserio worrying about his job might not love the quarterbacks, might love Will Anderson and be like, you know what, I know this isn't popular, but I care about my job, so I'm going to do what I think is best.
Let me give you the caveat, though, Jeremy. It goes to what we've talked about, what Lance brought up. The only way that scenario makes sense is if there's still a quarterback in their future in this draft somewhere, somehow. If Will Anderson is the guy in his gut he believes is the guy, that's fine. But then if he goes and finagles some draft capital to get back into the top 10 or get where he needs to go to still get one of those top three or four guys that were on this draft board, then I think that a lot of people are going to go easy, and then there'll be a lot more credit given to him for saying, I just didn't like the guys that everybody liked and loved, and I felt like this was our best chance to succeed by getting a dominant football player. If they go quarterback somewhere else, like especially in the top 10 of the first round, I think it's a different scenario. It's a different conversation.
I just look at it from like you got to be right. You got to be like that's it. Like it's pretty simple. You either do well or you do poorly in the draft. You could go defense and not take Stroud. Stroud could be great, and you're going to be looked at as a failure with the draft. You could go Stroud. He's not good. He's not as good as Will Anderson, and you look like a failure in the draft. You have to hit. Like, it's a hit rate. Like, you have to hit on the pick. You hit on the pick, everybody's happy. You don't hit on the pick, everybody's mad. Whether it's, you know, quarterback, defensive end, you might have more leeway. Maybe they forgive you more if you go quarterback, but he's not going to keep. It's not going to save his job. Well, I went conservative. I did what was popular. I did what everybody wanted. It failed, Mr. McNair. So please, please don't fire me. That's not how it works.
I don't think he has to say that, though. I think that the McNairs understand enough of it, and they've heard and seen, and they feel every day what everybody feels like this franchise to do. And whether right or wrong in the way you do your evaluations and how you pick your players, I believe that he wouldn't have to go beg for his job. I believe that they would give him a little extra leash and say, you know what? You made the right move for this franchise, and he didn't turn out the way we thought. But I don't think he would be – he would be facing the fire as much, especially because it's the quarterback position and what everybody has said about these first two guys.
If Casario can't turn this around and he goes Stroud at number two, and Stroud turns out to be, you know, average, not very good, the Texans aren't a playoff team for the foreseeable future, how long does Nick Casario stay on his job?
Man, I think a lot of factors come into play, because now while you're going through the growing pains, if you have a chance to go quarterback again next year because he didn't turn out and they failed, and you have a chance to right the wrong quickly, you've seen guys that have been able to survive that, because in Arizona there was a Kyler Murray after a Josh Rosen, and a general manager is able to survive. Now, how long he survives is another conversation, but it also relates to how did you do the rest of the draft? Because if you went with those moves, you didn't give up any capital along the way, or you did later on to get better players, and you had another draft like you did a year ago, excluding the first round like we're doing now, but saying you found starters along the way in the second and third and fourth rounds, and I'm saying, you know, and then we haven't even seen Mechie yet. If you hit on all those others and show you got really quality football players, I think that scenario, along with the fact that if Stroud fails – and you know you're going to have another top pick, that I think that he can hang on to his job. But obviously he's going to be on a major hot seat.
Yeah. See, I guess the point that I'm trying to make is whoever he picks at number two, whether – I mean, in this scenario, we're acting like Young's gone. So if he picks Stroud and he doesn't lead the Texans back to, like, the playoffs in 3 years, he's going to get fired. If he takes Will Anderson at number two and doesn't lead the Texans back to the playoffs in 3 years, he's going to get fired. Like, I don't think that it really impacts the timeline picking, like – what is popular, what is safe. And I think I think quarterback would obviously be popular. I don't really know what safe is. Like, is taking the best player available in the draft ahead of a quarterback that has some concerns, is that the risky move? Absolutely not. That's not risky.
Well, let me ask
you this.
That's
taking BPA.
Let me ask you this. What's the difference if we just flip-flop the scenario? Skip Lance's draft and say Stroud goes one, like a lot of people think, at least they thought he was going to do, and you get Bryce Young. And then Bryce Young's
the same. I think it's the same. I really do. I think it's the same. Like, you get graded as a general manager in this league based on the hit rate. Like, if you hit and you're winning, you're safe. If you miss and you're losing, you're not. Like, I really do think it's that simple.
I think it's that simple with almost every other position on the field. I think, especially as it relates to this draft, this scenario, and these players, I think it's different if it's Bryce Young sitting in your lap waiting for you to take him. I think no one will fault you for taking him. And he will not face as much scrutiny if he does, even if he doesn't do well.
Brandon T says, if Young goes one, take Will Anderson at number two, then trade up and go get Will Levis. That's my dream scenario. It really is. Like, because in that scenario, you're taking a risky quarterback. I'll give you that. I'll concede that he is a risky quarterback. I think Bryce Young's risky because he's tiny. I think C.J. Stroud is risky because exactly. So, like, if you're telling me that I can have a risky quarterback at number two, or I can have Will Anderson, the BPA, and then a risky quarterback that I trade up for? Yeah, give me that scenario. I'd rather have the best player in this draft and a risky quarterback than a risky quarterback and not the best player in this draft.
Well, that goes back to what I said earlier, too, in the fact that it matters how you handle the rest of the first round and or quarterback. If you still end up getting quarterback and you take Will Anderson, it's a different scenario than if you take Will Anderson and just elect a punt on quarterback for this year.
713-780-ESPN. Joe, what would you do it to if Bryce Young goes number one? You just taking Stroud?
Oh, definitely Stroud.
Okay, very easy.
Definitely.
What would you do, Houston? 713-780-3776. Bad Take Boulevard is back. We've been doing the Bad Take Boulevard Bracket Edition to crown the champion of Bad Take Boulevard 2022-2023 edition. New York, the Bronx bombing fans chanting, "We want Houston, we want Houston," and then being swept by the Houston Astros and having their 2022 baseball lives come to an end. That was the Bad Take Boulevard champion in 2022-23. Today, we begin the 2023-24 season of Bad Take Boulevard. Who made the list? Not too late to get on that list, too. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from the River House at East River 9 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.